the neo-post-apocalyptic wasteland, the last video store on Earth still spreads the lost art of cinema. But during the month of October, its employees and some special guests shine a spotlight on horror! Welcome to the Apocalypse Video Shocktober Spooktacular, Part 2. Turn off your garbage disposal, secure your load, and whatever you do, watch out for the man with hooks. It's Final Destination 2.
For every action,
is that guy drinking beer?
There is a reaction.
Wow.
For every cause, there is an effect. For every beginning, there is an end. Because once fate is set in motion, it cannot be stopped. Or can it?
Kimberly, look at me.
Oh my God.
What did you see?
There's gonna be a huge accident. Everybody's gonna die.
Being alive after we were supposed to die caused a rift in Death's design.
Which means Death could be coming for us.
I have this really bad feeling. It's not over yet.
Final Destination 2.
Hello and welcome to another terrifying installment of the Apocalypse Video Shocktober Spooktacular Part 2. Whoa. I'm joined again. Oh, I'm Dave. Oh, Jesus, those damn pigeons. I'm sorry. I'm joined again by Ryan.
Ever hear of the ozone layer, asshole?
Jackie.
Man with hooks?
Damn it.
Man with hooks. Now you have to follow up with, he's right.
Michael.
Just say, man, he's right. He's a man with hooks. Man with hooks.
Man with hooks.
He's right. Man with hooks.
Right.
And finally, Nicholas Immortan Hoof.
Can we go get the guys? I'm getting horny.
Okay, so Nick gets the points for best intro.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's just true. Can't believe they open with that.
I should have had Nick before Mike, because then Mike could have said something like, what does she say? The balls and chain for the orgy or something like that.
Whips and chains.
Yeah, this is a dialogue delivered to someone's friend's dad.
Yeah, that's just the way you talk to your friend's dad.
Which is how you know they're doomed.
He was a gill.
Kimberly, you sure you've got everything? Credit card, cell phone, AAA card?
Yeah, it's Daytona, not Somalia. All
right. Fix-a-flat, road flare, sunblock, mace.
Condoms, whips, chains. Just kidding, Mr. Corman. Don't worry, I'll keep an eye on her.
Well, that makes me feel a lot better. Thanks.
Okay.
All righty.
Can we go get the guys? I'm getting horny.
Go on.
Okay, I'll call you. Whips and chains. That's nice. Whatever, your dad's cool. Yeah.
Buckle up!
Yeah, well...
He's also like, I don't know what age they were supposed to be.
He's definitely 4 years older than the woman playing his daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're talking about Final Destination 2, the 2003 horror film from Snakes on a Plane director David Ellis.
Classic.
And a quick side note, it's worth, I want to point this out because I think it's funny, as a brief Snakes on a Plane side note. Samuel Jackson said he took that role because he was a huge fan of Final Destination 2.
Well, he should be. Makes sense.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
And he should be, because this movie is hilarious.
Yeah.
And also, he does like money.
Yes. That's probably the real reason, but it doesn't hurt to say in a press tour, well, you know, I was a really big fan of David Ellis' Final Destination 2.
Yeah, and Homeward Bound 2 as well. A lot of twos.
He did Homeward Bound 2?
Yeah.
Sequel King. Wow.
Lost in San Francisco. Duh.
This guy's basically James Cameron.
Yeah.
Kind of sequel.
I want to see his Avatar.
That would be good. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Well, yeah, Ryan, be awesome.
Final Destination 2 is your pick, so
yeah.
I'll let you kind of start things off here.
Well, yeah, it's, I don't have a huge reason for it, picking it. It's more of like, it had a, I feel like growing up in high school is around the time this came out, probably like my beginning of high school, like maybe end of junior high, and it was kind of like a, you know, it was sort of like, I hadn't seen the first one, except for maybe pieces on TV, really. And it just became sort of, had a reputation, sort of, it kind of just like being how gnarly it was and all this stuff. And there's a lot in that beginning of the movie was basically the trailer of the movie. And that, I feel like, is stuck in the consciousness, even though like people maybe don't remember the rest of the movie, but the beginning traffic thing.
Are you talking about the lumber?
Yeah, those damn logs.
That's terrifying. I feel like that's across the board. Like, I've never seen the first one. I feel like a lot of people haven't seen the first one. I can't name like a set piece from that one, but like everyone knows the logs.
Everyone knows those damn logs.
And
so.
PVC tubing terrifies me.
Well, yeah. Nick and Dave, you saw, before we all got into the studio, you had already seen the first one for research.
Yeah, I watched it too. So.
Oh, you did too. What's the kind of quick and dirty of the first one?
Well, I wanted to bring it up because I've seen all. I don't think I've seen the last one, but I've seen. I know I've seen three and four and two before.
How and many are there?
There's five now. Was that right, Dave?
Five. Yeah.
There's five of them, and so the. And they're
did they
all
ever reboot. Like, did they ever do a soft reboot for one of the sequels where they called it like Destination?
That was the fourth one. Yeah,
they love doing that shit.
So I was,
but then they went back to five with the fifth one. So
it's weird because I don't, now that I've seen two of them, number one and two, I almost don't see why they would ever need to do a reboot.
Yeah, they're all kind of a reboot of this. Of
It's the same movie, right? So
this is the only one I remember that's referencing the first one. Like or the plane stuff, right? Like there might be like a thing, like a throw. I remember in the third one, that's the one with Mary Elizabeth Winstead and the amusement park roller coaster falling apart. And I remember maybe there's a throwaway line, like there were some kids back then that did this, but there's not like this like direct connection, you know.
Yeah.
There's always
legend. 1 year ago today was the first movie.
Yeah. And so it's kind of fun to revisit this first one. I know this is about the second one, we'll get into it, but I wanted to bring in this context and this first one a little bit. So I said this when we before we start watching it, I was just like, imagine it's 2003, whatever, or 2000 when the first one came out, and Scream has been huge for the last 3 years. Like there's been three Scream movies since it premiered toward the end of the 90s, and American Pie is huge. So what's big in horror is teens getting killed, you know, and it's very sexy. You know, like they're back. Like the teen slasher was
getting killed or back.
Yeah, it was like kind of dead for like, you know, a good 10 years. Teen slasher, and then Wes Craven brought it back.
Yeah,
Wes Craven brought it back. You're more of a slasher guy, but that's right, David, kind of.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So like Scream comes back, and so this is sort of playing off that. But I was saying, which is not fun about it, is that there's no really, you know, killer. I mean, the death is the killer, I guess, but there's not like a physical thing. Well, but I was going to say, like, about only a couple of months before this, Final Destination 2 comes out. This came out in January 2003. In October 2002, The Ring came out.
And that changes the whole next 10 years of horror.
Then it's spooky kids.
Then it's like The Grudge and The Ring and like all... like
remakes of Japanese films.
That, and then also like, you know...
that kind of like grossness. That kind of wet and spooky.
So yeah. It's interesting. I don't know if you're going to get to this, Ryan, but what I was thinking of, and I could be wrong, but... so I was thinking, because I didn't watch Final Destination. I think I saw one of them in the theaters. I don't remember which one. But I was a big Saw fan when I was in high school. And this is, you know, high school time. But I was thinking that this movie kind of felt like it was setting a precedent for, like, the meticulousness of death. Whereas opposed to, like, 80s and 70s slashers, it was about the killer and all that stuff. But this isn't about a killer. And it's about, like, the design of death. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this kind of set off a chain of events that's pretty cool. Like, it's like, you know, someone's putting together a puzzle of death. Like, okay, what if this happens, triggers this, and then this light bulb goes off and a spark hits this flame and blah, 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 and you're dead.
Yeah, well, that's what's kind of funny about watching these, both of them, because the first one is more of this sort of grounded Twilight Zone. There's not very, like, meticulous...
I'm sure might have saw this, but it was the first one was a spec script for the X-Files.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
And also I didn't even why I thought this the name Final Destination is reference is a plane for term. It's your and I never even thought about that my whole
the
life.
Plane, the big thing in the first one is the plane.
And also the numbers, like it reminds me of Lost a lot kind of thing, but like but it is a very Twilight Zone-y, I guess you're right, X-Files. This first one where the whole, like, Rube Goldberg machine of death doesn't necessarily happen till the end. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, they're more of, like, freak accidents in the first one where it's just,
what
like...
what are some of the ways they die in the first one?
These people all died hours after getting off the plane.
Yeah, like coincidence. You know, a bus or, like, lightning striking, something weird, and, like,
They name
the train.
A couple of the ones in that one scene in two where it's like, well, actually, my old coworker got stabbed by a student. Oh, she was on the and I actually saw a girl get hit by a bus. Well, she was on the
Are those deaths from the first movie?
Yeah, they call it out. They're like, all of these people were on flight blah
in,
blah,
like,
blah.
In one of like two or three like blatant exposition dumps in the movie, like, so here's what happened in the first movie.
Everyone's like, wait, I have a story too.
Well, it's kind of funny because
I'll tell you what happened.
Also, like in the first one, I will say the first one I think might be a better movie, but I think the second one is more fun. But the first one has like the element of like the plot of they think that Devon Sawa, who was a mega babe at the time, you know, he was in Casper, he was in Wild America, Jonathan JTT, and all this stuff. He's being framed for the killings of it, and that's a whole other cool idea where it's like they think he set the bomb on the plane and all these things, and also the vision he has, it kind of makes it feel like he may have fallen asleep on the plane, and like that's what he saw. But in the second one, it's like this whole like,
whoosh,
like in the eye, and the first one is just gearing on your like anxieties of getting on a plane, of like seeing like something weird on the like getting loaded on the plane, or just like weird creakiness that's happening when you're getting on. Like there's not like freak shit going on. It's just very just like normal shit that's going on, but it seems creepy.
One is it came out in 2000, right? This is that was a pre 9/11 movie.
All the kids brought guns on board.
Everyone had guns
cutters.
And
it was
knives.
A different time.
Yeah, and full water bottles.
Just walking with like a crate of fireworks onto the plane.
Yeah, that freak accident wouldn't have happened if there was TSA.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But I like the first one a little bit more, and I think it's because it's tying into what Ryan's saying. But there's a level of like paranoia, and that everybody thinks he's crazy. And whereas in the second one, which is the one that we're supposed to be talking about, the one that everybody's pretty almost on board with the concept that death is coming for you from the beginning. And I like the first one.
They all get in on it really quickly.
This one, my hot take, I don't know if this is a hot take, but I think this
is 20-year-old hot take.
This is almost like a Looney Tunes movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and you're kind of rooting for it. Like, how crazy is this death going to happen on this person?
Yeah, you're like, you're cheering for the people to like, oh, is it going to, oh,
it's coming, it's coming.
Is his hand going to get in the
disposal?
And
then they have like the fake outs. There's a lot of fake outs in this one.
The fake outs are what like almost makes this movie for me.
The alternate title for these movies could be called Red Herring Part 1, Part 2, Part 3, because they set up like 50 different things. You're like, oh, that's what's going to kill him. That's what's going to kill him.
But it's fun and it creates tension because you do know he's probably going to die and you're like, what's it going to be?
We know they're going to die.
Well, I think it's someone who
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, we're so excited about this movie. This movie's got us all jazzed up.
Love talking about death.
I think that's queens die.
That's cool because I like that it does that because it's not only you experiencing like the movie, but you're kind of experiencing what the characters are experiencing, right? Because they know they're going to die, so they're always on the lookout, and so are you. And yeah. It creates this like very not so much empathy because you're not really feeling bad that they're dying, but it's like you're scared too.
Yeah, you're on edge. I was gonna say kind of on that like one you were saying is more like a Twilight Zone-y feeling. And that like I kept on expecting that the deaths were gonna have some kind of like, you know, ironic like punished for your hubris kind of angle to it, but they kind of don't. Like it's not necessarily like, and then well, you know, we'll talk about more in depth some of the deaths, but like it's rarely like, and then this lady's a bitch, so you know she's gonna get
like the
this.
Death is tailored to her.
Yeah, it's not, there's no morals behind it, like you don't learn a lesson.
Which I'm glad for.
It did kind of, it was, I think, morally fitting that the guy got the barbed wire fence blasted through him and then was bisected.
Well, he shouldn't have done so many drugs.
Yeah, you do drugs, you get chopped up by barbed wire.
Yeah. But there is ultimately, like, for all the deaths, it was like, that was so arbitrary.
Yeah, they're
well, that's and that's
cruel.
A fun thing about these movies. I've seen all five, and whatever you want to say about the quality of the movies themselves, like some of the characters are just downright like, you know, insufferable.
Yeah.
You could always count on any of the movies, good or bad, to deliver on the deaths
and creative
and
likeness
and creative as hell. Even the worst one is, which in my opinion is Part 5, is still very creative. So it's like, and I think you were talking about the tone of the first movie compared to this. Like
it also looks different too. I think the first one kind of looks like more like a movie.
Spooky.
This one has more like a teen show kind of vibe,
brightly lit and all that. But I think it's like at some point they quickly realize it's like people are here for the kills. Like we're already, it felt like by two we're already into that Friday the 13th. Like let's just repeat the kills.
It's like
over
it's
and
basically
over
like by the second one we're already in Friday the 13th like Part 4 already or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like it's already like it's already gone off. You know,
yeah,
it's like
we're gonna pop some heads
they
off.
Knew
we're
what
gonna
people
bisect.
Wanted.
It's
they knew
wild.
What people wanted.
Yeah,
we know what you're here to
but
see.
But it's just interesting watching them because yeah, it's a totally that first one. You know, it has the same kind of tropes of like Signs and stuff, but it doesn't get into like the
the
weeds like the second one tries to. Some well, I don't know why they even try to. The first one just kind of like is like the Signs are more. Not as it's not a man with hooks. You know, it's like
it's
not a
man with
hooks.
The Signs are so. Into the
it's
weeds
fun,
that it comes back around for me and
it's
is
so
kind
funny.
Of fun.
Well, like we were making jokes like in the first movie, like when they're getting on the plane, like stuff like thank you for writing you're dead soon airlines or something like that. Like it just seems like the things are so overtly like you're gonna die. Like who like and in the second one in particular or maybe it's the first one. Why would your father out with no context say you got your whole life ahead of you? Like nobody says that. That is such a random thing.
What are you talking about? Dads love to say that.
So, 17, on the loose, senior trip with your friends in Paris, 10 days in the springtime. Live it up, Alex. You got your whole life ahead of you.
Well, that just for no context, just you got your whole life ahead of
you. I hope you don't die today, because otherwise you have your whole life ahead of you.
Like we were all saying, like Nick and I, like when we were watching it, whispered, like okay, so the dad orchestrated all this, right?
Yeah. Dad did 9/11. I mean, blah blah blah.
It's pretty freaky, like that. I mean, we got to stop talking about the first one, but that plane crash is like pretty brutal. Like it's like. There's like this explosion, and it's sort of like Lost, how people are getting sucked out the side. But it's like then people like like on fire.
It's very
and
visceral.
It's very visceral.
Yeah.
How did?
And I would think that's a distinction between one and two because I think the deaths in one, there are still funny moments, especially the end.
The end is one.
But
of
it's like I think for the most part, the deaths in the first one, they don't really play it for comedy.
Yeah. Or
the
yeah.
One does.
Yeah.
How do the teens survive the plane crash?
Well, he's
got off the guy. Yeah. The guy has a vision, and he goes. He looks crazy. He's like, the plane's gonna explode. It's going down, and he has like this nervous breakdown. And then
security
this other guy who doesn't like him wants to punch him, and then they all get pushed off. And then there's
Spring Break, dude.
Yeah, and then what's her name? Allie Carter. Yeah,
Allie Larder.
Yeah,
Clear Rivers. She's like very like cool kind of like emo girl in this one, in the first one. And even dark hair and stuff, and she's like, I'm listening to him, and she gets off, you know, kind of thing.
She's
and,
like, he's legit. And, I'm going to be blonde in the next movie.
But I make sure we get to it, David, but there's something I want to bring up about, like, deleted scenes from the first one, I think, that changed the whole course of this whole series regarding her and a lot. So it's
maybe bring it up now so we can have that further context when we talk about the second one.
Well, I was going to say,
deleted scenes from the first movie.
Well, we
promise we'll talk about Final Destination 2.
We will talk about the logs in a sec.
This is
so I saw three. And I,
three is good. Was it four? Or was the 3D one though? Right, which they screwed up. They screwed up not making 3D.
I mean, yeah, what a drop in the ball there.
Yeah, but anyway, I was just like, what's in the special features? I was curious. I had the Blu-ray, and I was like, oh, there's like a whole featurette about test audiences, and I think that's weird. And I didn't watch the whole thing because we were about to record, but there was three deleted scenes. And they all said alternate love scene, alternate ending, and alternate, like, pregnancy test. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? Like, that was weird. So there was a whole subplot that must have got deleted, maybe from test audiences, that, like, Allie Carter and Devon Sawa get together, like, in the...
That makes sense because Dave and I were looking at each other when...
She kept saying babe.
She starts calling him baby. Yeah, and we were like, that's so weird.
So that you have, like, they get together and she gets pregnant. And that's one of the things that keeps them from dying.
Her
dying, basically, is, like, having life, you know, creating life basically keeps her from dying kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
And he just dies. So, basically, there's the whole scene where, and we're spoiling, I guess, Violence Nation 1. But he, like, saves her from getting, like, burned up in the car with the whole electricity kind of thing, and he blows back but doesn't die. In the other one, he dies there, basically.
Oh.
And there's no scene of them going to Paris and all that stuff. That was all reshoot type of stuff.
Wow.
And so they, he ends up dying, and she survives and has the baby. Like, it cuts to, like, her giving birth and, like, visiting their, like, little, like, they put the plaque, you know, remember the part where, the bully guy's like, I'm gonna carve my girlfriend's name on here because she deserves to be on this plaque too for like the memorial. Like, there's it basically like pans out of a memorial with all their names added to that plaque kind of thing. And that's like the end of the movie. It's like that. There's no like crazy like, you know, like who did they die at the end? Like this the end of the movie in the original, the first one. There's like a big, signs are falling down off the off of Paris, and it's like about to kill them all, you know, kind of thing.
And we do get that referenced in this one too.
Yeah, but it's just a somber ending, like the ending of the first.
Wow.
One.
So the test audiences changed the course of this series to comedy.
I think so. Yeah.
They were like, no, I don't want that shit. Can you get a little funnier here? Can we get some Looney Tunes?
Because honestly, the last kill of Final Destination is really I guess you could argue the one Sean William Scott, aka Stifler from American Pie, his death is kind of funny.
Kind of, but still like they're not decapitated. Played, like, yeah. Yeah.
But the ending of Final Destination 1 is overtly comedic because they go to France finally. And Devon Sawa is like, you know, I've been thinking it out. Like, why did we survive? You know what I mean? And like crazy shit happens, and this sign is like what's the expression? Seesawing back and forth, and like they're trying to determine, well, who's next? And he's like, no, it's get me. And then the bully guy with the great line, well, who's next? And you just see this whole sign behind him, and then cuts before it crushes
cuts to
him.
Black. Yeah, and it's kind of like a funny,
and the audience type, cheers.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, yay! Yeah. And then the one just ends.
Die!
The original ending was like a somber sort of like something you would see in like a X-Files Twilight Zone kind of ending, kind of thing of like. I guess he was right or something.
Ron
I don't know.
Sterling.
And the kid's name is like Alex Chance or something. Like it's like.
Alex you see, Scully, death has a plan for us all.
It's like that kind of thing. Yeah.
You're right, Mulder.
But I'm just saying like, so I'm like, I think they're right. Cause I think it is fun. I think the series is a fun
Absolutely.
Series, but yes. It would have been, that first one, it felt like more of a complete, like, kind of scary, weird movie about, like, death and cheating death and stuff, and very different tone. It's really weird. It's kind of interesting that they did this, I think. So
I think we're context up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And now Ryan, we can talk about
you. Why don't you explain the plot? What little there is.
Well, yeah.
Of Final Destination 2. And also be sure to include any story narrative plot twists with this one.
I'll try to remember, but...
We just watched it!
I know, but I'm just like, it's basically, you know, it's a year after Flight, 180, which was from the first movie. And, you know, some teens are getting high in the car and they're going on a trip, a road trip, spring break. They're going to Daytona. Maybe college age.
It's never established. And we never actually see the main girl, Kimberly, like, go to school. So.
But it's the weirdest scene where they're on the freeway and they're all look like it's like the most social event of the season of them looking at everybody on the freeway.
On the freeway in their cars.
And they're all looking at each other and they're passing joints to each other through the window. Not really, but I'm just saying it's like that kind of thing. Remember there was the girl flashing on the motorcycle and Jack, you had the great line that they don't make them like that anymore.
Because those were like the fakest tits I've seen in a minute. And I did say out loud, they don't make them like that anymore.
Those were early 2000s tits.
They do not augment in that style at this time.
As was the style at the time.
To get a big old melon.
And it was just like a funny scene, but then she has the vision that, and it's a pretty awesome, I think holds up pretty well, special effects wise. There's a lot of crazy explosions. Even though the movie,
that first log going through the car, nailing the state trooper was like, we were out loud, just like, yeah.
Well, that we were, yeah. Like when, like several times, I think actually with every kill, Nick and I, we jumped back in our seats, like all the popcorn flew up in the air. We were loving this.
There was a lot of hooting and hollering, just like cheering for death.
You guys were like cheering. I was like on the edge of my seat.
I wasn't saying go death go, but it would be like a big thing. I'd be like, whoa.
I was rooting it on. I had like a foam number one.
Death.
Death Mike kept lifting up his shirt like,
Michael was flashing his fake tits
my
the whole
shirt
time.
Off and I've painted death
He's got
on
a painted
chest.
D on his chest.
I thought you guys were going to be the E8. What? Come on.
Yeah. It's like kind of like a... It's pretty weird. Like it
made me wish I was seeing this in a like
in a rowdy
2003.
Theater. Yeah,
it would have been
definitely.
And it's pretty. For how the movie I think looks cheaper the other way wise. Like you said, David. Like all those like effects are pretty great and like
they're
it's
good.
Gruesome and like
yeah.
very gory. Like this one's gorier than the first one too. I think as well. But like they turned all that up and
there's some moments of definitely serious. Like this is way gorier than like talking about slashers. Like gorier than any of the Halloweens or Friday the 13th that we've seen for sure.
I think like you're right that it's sort of played up. Maybe the reason why is that it's Looney Tunes violence, like cartoon violence. Mm-hmm. It's like watching Kill Bill or something.
Yeah, it doesn't hit the same way that Saw does. I'm not really a fan of the Saw movies and like those ones. It's like gory. I don't know, and more of a
that's where the Ring kind of stuff sort of kicks in. I think is like the torture porn kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I would not refer to
like
those ones as Looney Tunes.
Yeah, those are prolonged deaths. These are very quick. Boom, you're dead.
And it's for the most part, it keeps these deaths as macabre as they are, fairly light. And silly.
Were you gonna say something, then, Nick?
Well, I was just saying the tone, like you guys are saying, is totally different. I think have movies like Saw and Hostel, and there's just more. It's like sadism involved.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking when I say Saw, I guess I'm thinking more of the sequels, like Saw 2.
Into the like pit of needles kind of shit.
Yeah. Oh, that shit's gnarly. That was like being in a theater for that was like the whole audience was like not sitting down. They were all like up like this. It was
It's funny. We all kind of experienced those same types of movies in the theaters. Like for me, Paranormal Activity, obviously it's way different, but same type of vibe where you're feeling everything with the audience.
And they only work that better. That's the only way to watch these things, I think.
Yeah. So, but Final Destination 2, it's the, I love like the meticulousness of, I love what I was telling Dave is that my favorite deaths in these movies are the ones that are pretty straightforward. Like one thing happens and then it goes wrong. And because those are more believable to me, like the kid who gets crushed by the glass, like pigeons fly and it causes this guy to hit a lever and it drops and kills this kid.
That's like, my favorite one because he's just trying to play with the pigeons.
Pigeons!
After that whole dentist scene, which is just amounts to nothing.
Yeah, which is
like,
great.
The tank is like overflowing. The needles are slipping.
But it's so goofy. Like this Rube Goldberg machine of things happening and nothing happens. That's such a fun way to go.
Choked on the pufferfish.
Yeah.
And then you're right, Mike. I mean, Nick. Just like this little thing happens with the fucking pigeons and the glass falls. And if you weren't like, you may have forgotten about that pane of glass from that's shown right in the beginning of that scene. Mm-hmm. Like, which it's very cool. It's a very cool like setup and punchline.
I do think like the way they shoot the. I would not say this movie overall is like Hitchcockian, but the death scenes, it's like very Hitchcock, where he's like, you're seeing all this stuff that the characters are unaware of, but the audience is aware of them. And I love that. And that's like a big thing I think helps the death scenes in this movie work so well.
Sean William Scott's name in the first one is Billy Hitchcock, by the way. So
wow.
Just a little wink for the audience.
Just to bring it back to the first movie.
I know plot schmat, whatever, who cares? But speaking of the birds in the pane of glass, when I worked at the Dollar Theater, birds. They said just birds.
Birds.
Hitchcock.
Yeah, right? Yeah, totally. It's very
Hitchcock with hooks.
I think this may have just finished playing or maybe was playing. Maybe I just started working at the Dollar Theater the same year this came out, but I missed it. But I remember my manager having the kid getting smushed by glass pane clipped out of the movie. Like not after they were done playing it, he took it. Like he like, you know, clipped it out of the film. So he had like the sequence on 35mm film. So you can just see that kid frame by frame getting smushed by
I'm imagining that like the manager of the Dollar Store Theater like having like a girl over. Like,
you I'm sure.
Cool? Yeah. You want to see something cool.
I mean, that's what the place was. Yeah.
What I'm thinking of, the manager has like a hidden room in the basement of the Dollar Theater.
Oh, all
just
the
like,
snuff parts.
Do you want to see my collection?
Oh, yeah.
It's basically Pearl.
He spliced together all the cool death scenes from various movies into one master reel.
Yeah.
I thought for a sec you were saying you're like, well, we have to edit this film because that scene just too upsetting.
Yeah, I thought that's what you're saying too.
No, like, no. It was just after they were done, he was like, I'm gonna clip that out of the movie, like
he
for
was
myself.
Like, this one's coming home
for
with
my
me.
Private collection.
And he had a handful. I was the only one I remember him having because it is a funny kind of thing to see, like just like looking at each. It's like, you know, maybe like a second of the film, like 24 frames of it. You know, just like.
Cool.
And had it like, I think like just hanging in the office, like pinned
that
on a board.
That scene was pretty gnarly.
But that one's so cool because that's the kind of scene, it's almost like you're watching someone die and I don't know if this will make sense, but real time where you're seeing him squished, where it's you know, and you do see it. Like it shows the whole thing, like him, his physical body just shrinking while this glass just compresses it.
Just being crushed like a watermelon.
Like a watermelon.
And we were talking about, too, while we were watching it, that, like, there's a scene where that kid's getting, like, tucked in. And he looks kind of old to be getting tucked in.
He looks like he's, like, a, you know, high schooler. And then his mom's like, here you go, honey, I'm turning off the light.
He looks like he's, like, 19.
Well, apparently, like, the age of the kid was debated when the filmmakers were making it. Like, initially, he was going to be younger.
Well, I was thinking, that maybe, like, he had to be older to, like, be able to kill him like that on screen.
Yeah, they're like,
so they settled on 15 as the age.
You can't kill an 8-year-old like that.
Yeah, if this is a visible, like, 10-year-old,
but
be
that feels like
glass.
Like, an 8-year-old thinks of running after some pigeons feels more realistic than, like, a 20-year-old or whatever he is.
I love pigeons!
I kind of took that scene that he was being like a little shit, like, I'm going to scare these pigeons.
Because they're yelling, pigeons, pigeons, because there's all these stupid like signs in the movie. Like,
well, like, it's so crazy because when you see his face, his face like lights up with, in my opinion, like devilish glee. He's like, hey, I'm going to scare these pigeons.
I think he's just excited to see the pigeons.
He just likes birds.
What I'm saying is that kid got what he deserved for scaring those pigeons.
Wow.
Everyone else's was just a, you know, in death's plan, but that kid deserved it.
Absolutely.
Wow. But he deserved to like be choking
really
on like a
pigeon
fish.
Advocates in our group of
friends. We love
justice for pigeons.
Here.
You know, you tell me you haven't ran into like a group of pigeons on the park.
No.
On the ground.
And it's not because I have
like
a deep
those
love.
Are sacred, majestic.
No,
birds.
It's not because I have a deep love for pigeons. It's just like I don't want a bunch of like rats with wings flying around me.
Have you ever encountered a lot of pigeons in the way, Stave? I feel like.
Well, I'm of course talking about my young days.
I think they're
not a lot of
now,
pigeons
right?
in the sky anymore, but I just never had an urge to like run into like a big thing of birds and watch them fly in the air. I just never did. I don't understand.
And
it.
That's why death will spare you.
Exactly.
I remember doing that with like at the park, and then realizing that you don't do that to geese because they turn around and they chase
hit,
after
they'll hurt
you.
You.
Yeah, they're like fuck you. They're like a fucking dinosaur.
You start
like,
shit.
Yeah.
End it.
Are there any or Dave? Since you've seen them all, are there any deaths with like animals eating people in these movies?
Not that I recall. No, that's the final. That's the final destination.
They could be
these
at,
animal
I can just imagine them being at like a zoo. And
I remember like
the
oh,
antlers.
Yeah,
lock is
like the
loose,
tiger pit.
And then a tiger comes out. And
I might maybe I'm forgetting one, but not that I recall. Like all the movies are more or less. Well, what's fun about them? They're all based around like I think a real. Fear that people could have airplanes,
roller coaster,
highway accident,
the dentist,
man with hooks, dentist,
roller coaster,
elevators.
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm afraid elevators, of man with hooks though. That's what
Which
I
is, I think it's a great thing that this movie does is like those are like especially the highway scene, like to further break down the highway scene and further automobile related deaths in this movie, like PVC pipe scares the shit out of me. And like I don't like driving behind like service trucks or anything like that because I'm like, did they secure that load in the back?
And,
I don't know if they did.
Yeah, is someone drinking beer?
I've definitely driven behind those like logs before.
Ugh. God.
And I get out of their way. I get out of their way. Yeah. And I haven't even seen this movie until recently, but I saw I was aware of that scene.
That trailer is famous. Because
again, you're like, what if some lumber kills me?
Or PVC pipe. Like,
or a big PVC
honestly,
pipe.
Like, if we're getting into deaths, because like we said, the plot for this movie, it's like same shit's happening to different people. Only in this time, the list is going backwards in the order of the
sure.
death. And then there's this whole thing, like, you got to bring in new life or whatever. Like, well, I guess we'll get to
and
the new life.
Instead of the plane crash, it's they avoided this traffic accident.
Yeah.
This horrific
traffic accident.
I mean, I think with this movie that there are a few deaths in this movie that aren't cartoonish. One of them being later on, like towards the third act, someone gets pinned in their car. There's like a log that goes through her side door. I don't remember the name.
It's like the it's the high powered business lady who's always smoking cloves, and
yes.
so she's
always yes. That's the key, is always smoking. And this log pins her leg. She's trapped. And I love it because when they're trying to save her, she still has a cigarette. She's like, well, I'm going to smoke while you're saving
and there's, me.
Hey, she's
like
stressed,
gas.
Okay?
There's like gasoline from another car leaking under the car as she's like actively
them,
smoking.
Yeah.
And when the car crashed earlier, a big sharp PVC pipe like went through the driver's seat, like right next to her head.
Yeah.
And then when they're using like the jaws of life and she's like, can you be a little quieter there? And the fucking firefighter's like, yo, put on quiet mode, you stupid bitch. But oh shit, I killed her. Could you be a little quieter with that thing, please?
Yeah, sure. I'll just put it on quiet mode.
That would be good.
Oh, yeah. That's a gnarly little death, too.
Well, because, like, he does something which causes the airbag to go, and then it, like, pushes her head back into the PVC pipe. And again, to me, that feels like a real death, because, I don't know, dude. Like, logs and PVC pipes, those are big bugaboos for me while I'm on the road.
Well, that's another one of my favorites because, like I said, it's like it's just a simple thing. Like this guy just jostled the car just right
with the jaws of life or whatever. Right?
Yeah, and then the airbag goes off and pushes her head right into the PVC pipe, and boy, it's brutal. And suddenly it's like oh shit moment.
This
then
is a movie
she drops
where it's
her
hard
cigarette
not
and
to
other shit explodes.
Yeah.
This is a movie where it's hard not to devolve into the Chris Farley Show type style of podcasting where it's like, this was great, and then this was great. Because that's really what the movie is. It's like cool creative kills.
Yeah. It's just like that. I'd say this one, if I was to pick some nits or whatever, it gets a little bit too pick in the weeds, nits. I think, with like the connections and like the signs and stuff like that, where I think it was a little bit more kind of cool and subtle and felt more like, like everyone's sort of like looking around at like for like signs, and this one is like making shadows of the, like we said, the man with hooks and
Orion,
stuff.
Orion, you were commenting on the mortician scene, which is really the nadir of that. The mortician, yeah, with the fog machine.
Yeah.
And he's in the first one too, but it doesn't seem as like, what do you guys think of the mortician guy too?
That's Evan Lewis.
Come to pick my brain.
Just a simple question and we'll leave you alone with your new friend.
Dead. Yet still fresh.
Look, we drove a long way to get here, so if you happen to know how to stop death, it'd be really great if you told us.
That was, it was very silly. They're like, we're gonna go to this spooky building through the basement where the fog machine is on, and then the big scary guy comes out with the body. He's like, hey.
Yeah. He's basically death, right? I feel like it's playing it up where it's like, this is like the physical embodiment of death.
He's got like, he's like, okay, let me explain the rules of,
well, it's kind of funny because,
well, you know, Mike, yeah, what I was, I don't know if anyone else, well, actually, Dave, he saw this movie with me, but I think this is really a spiritual sequel to Seventh Seal, right? Because you're playing a game with death and you're trying to cheat it. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I see. I hear what you're saying.
I like that.
Yeah.
In the first one, there's a reason for them to be there, and it's because they go to see the friend, and they think he killed himself because he felt his brother was on the plane, and he's like, he told me to get off, and he felt bad to get up that he killed himself, you know, and because he was strangled in the first death in Final Destination 1, and the mortician guy's like, no, like it looks like he was trying to get off the, it's like floss that's like killing, it kills the guy basically, and so they're like, there's a reason it's a big leap, but there's a reason for them to be there. And the mortician's kind of creepy about like death and stuff. And this one, it's like, we need to go to him because he's like the, you know,
he lives in like a haunted house. Yeah. And knows, yeah, about death.
That the second one has a lot more like superfluous exposition just to move the story along, where it's like I said, at the first one, it's a lot more coherent, at least to me, in terms of every sequence of events and how it all ties together and how it's looking like all these freak accidents, but this kid always is there.
Yeah. Like, and he's always looking like he's like on that killed him and stuff.
Yeah. Like there's a scene, this great scene where he's like, he's worried about this, his teacher are going to die. So he sneaks over to her house in the middle of the night and he's checking her car. And then the police show up and like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm just checking to see if the tire has air.
Like, yeah, dude, you look sus as hell.
Yeah. He's there. Like,
that's a fun element that I think the second movie is missing. Yeah. Like you say, like instead of that kind of thing, they fill it in with like, you ever heard of Flight 180? You know what I mean? They like take this deliberate left turn to like, we got to halt the movie to explain the events of the previous movie and how this connects to that. And you're just like, I'm rolling my eyes during those scenes. I'm like, get to the hooks.
Let's see them blow up at the fireworks factory.
The second one also, I will say, in my opinion, has the actors are worse than the first one.
The first one has good actors.
I wish they cared a little bit more about the acting, because it just does, like, in the scenes where kids are not dying, which is, you know, not that many, but and when they are, it's just like, oh, man, it's just kind of like, it feels cheap a little bit when you have those actors, so.
You start wondering, like, when is there going to be a water leak somewhere that's going to lead to this, to this, to this?
But there are some funny character quirks, like the guy who does drugs. Like I remember when they leave the police department, there's a shot of him like he's looking in his jacket pocket to make sure his coke is still there.
Yeah. I feel like every time they cut to him, he's just like doing a bump, and it's like, bro, you're actively driving. Come on, let it wait.
And he has that helmet hair too, which just drives me.
Oh my god, that hair! It's so 2003. It's it's painful to look at. There's also, I mean, speaking of the less than impressive acting, the main girl Kimberly is. she's doing her best, but. Bless her.
Yeah, she's not the like the first. Yeah, I mean, I keep bringing up the first one. The first one has like a Devon Sawa, which is like kind of fun to watch with, and also like, you know, there's a lot of side characters like Sean William Scott and what's her name is in it a lot. Ally Sheedy, but yeah,
it's Ally Sheedy.
Yeah, but no, there's
Clear Rivers is her name.
Clear, yeah. How can I forget Clear?
Clear.
It's like, I don't think any of us really, well, there was almost like, no, it was unsaid when we were watching it, but during the first movie, it's like, is her name Claire or Clear? And then the second movie, you see it in print, her name is Clear, and we were all like, oh!
It's an insane thing to name a
and
character.
Yeah, and it grew on me. I like it.
Clear Rivers. Oh, I wanted to say another, like, very early 2000s that the guy who was on the motorcycle, the black guy who's like who's always wearing a turtleneck and like the worst, like, glasses.
I like his trope of just like, I'm not going to believe this is real, like, yeah. No matter how obvious it is.
And then he tries to like blow his brains out, but it's like, sorry, they're that's not dead. In Death's plan.
It's not your time to die.
But all of his styling, just every time they show him, I'm like, this is the year 2003. This is what I'm looking at.
His turtleneck is like getting higher and higher every
he
time.
He wears
it cuts
so many turtlenecks. He's got. I think he even has like a goatee.
What you missed, Mike, was that there's some parallels between the height of the turtleneck and his closeness to death. So every time someone dies, the turtleneck gets higher. So you probably missed
it's
that.
Choking
but
him.
That would have been that yeah. should have been his death.
It's,
is he just like
strangled by the turtleneck?
His turtleneck strangles him.
Oh,
it's kind of like they're kind of. It kept reminding me of, I know if you guys haven't all watched The Rehearsal, but there's that guy that's like talking about numbers and stuff and the connections between things and just like keeps going on and on about it. This is what I was getting reminded of in this movie a little bit. Just this is connected to this and going backwards.
Going backwards. And life is the only thing that can disrupt death.
One thing I say. That's the... Well, I think another thing that like a quip with or a little like nitpick thing with this movie is that in the first one the sequence of death is very clear, like you mm-hmm. There's a plan, so this guy, he traces the order through the explosions in the plane and he's like, okay, I know for sure who's gonna die next or whatever. But in this one it's like just based on her memory and it's not
yeah.
I mean if you were paying attention, I guess you would remember like the order, but I mean in the
I
premonition didn't. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. It's just like you're kind of like, oh, she just says this guy's gonna die next. It's just less I don't know, it's a little smoother, I think, in the first one, but where this one's just like everyone's
at risk. Also with the first one, again, like I never thought I'd say, like, you need the acting prowess of Devon Sawa. But like there's this whole element where he's clearly, it seems like he's going crazy and that's how everyone perceives it. But with him, he's just like, I have a plan. I do this and this. You know, he's very manic. Whereas the energy in this one from our lead protagonist, I can't even remember her name.
Kimberly, right?
Kimberly.
It's more just like, I don't know. Let me like remember. How
she's like, I'm having
yeah,
a premonition.
Yeah, she like channels her powers a little bit more.
Yeah.
She's got and a full-on like That's So Raven psychic.
Oh yeah, she has like those visions too of like the van going into
yeah.
the.
Yeah, and then she's like, wait, it wasn't her. It was me. I was driving it.
I have to kill myself to stop Death's plan. And also like the whole thing, and this is what I was kind of, I think I alluded to this earlier in plot twists, but one thing that this one does a little differently from part one is like it suggests that you could stop Death's plan by creating new life. And so this movie introduces like this goofy ass Death's riddle type thing where it's like, oh no, it didn't mean a baby's birth. It had to be an accidental birth or bring back to life. Or you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's just, it gets into that goofiness. And like, again, like you need to have a very special actor to pull that kind of thing off. And I'm sorry, they're just not doing it with
this
movie.
It just became like we were talking about, like we're already way down the line of horror slashers. Like, you know, we're already in the mid-sequel point at this second one, you know, I guess. Like, they're not trying to... And yeah, I mean, like, I haven't seen all the Scream sequels, but, like, people like those at least the second one a lot. You know, I think it's pretty close to the first one, so...
Well, and it kind of gets back into what Nick was saying, too. It's like, you don't necessarily need to connect all these movies so meticulously to each one that came before it.
Yeah. Like they could, it's just, it resets or resets or reboot every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They could literally just do, okay, this is the third year after. This is the fourth year after. This is the fifth year after the plane or whatever.
And I'll tell you guys, maybe with the exception of the third one feels the most disconnected, but 4 and 5, I'll tell you now, kind of a spoiler, but they kind of go out of their way again to connect it back to the first movie. And it's just like, you don't need to do that.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's not what people are coming here for, like the interconnectivity of these movies. Like, people don't watch the Friday the 13th series to see like how 7 connects back to 2 or
Dave,
something.
I don't know. Have you ever been on a message board?
Oh, well, those nerds. Dave, but I mean, the general populace. The general populace doesn't give a shit.
Dave, I have a question. Since you seem pretty familiar with the whole series, is there like a standout kill amongst the entire franchise that is like, oh, this is the best Final D kill?
It might be that damn Hlogs. Kid. It might be that
Honestly,
kid.
I think maybe the most memorable is the and I think Ryan, you might have said it or gotten on this, but I think the most memorable in the zeitgeist is the highway crash in 2. Because again, I think that's very relatable. Like pretty much everyone drives, everyone's been driven behind a truck that's, you know, carrying like a dangerous load, and I think that's the one that people most remember.
And I think that one is the most realistic in terms of like, like that could happen.
That one's tapping into like the fear of like, what if I'm driving and this freak accident happens?
Just like one person up there fucks up and it fucks up all of us.
We could die.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, what if I'm in an elevator? There's a man with hooks and he smells my hair, and then I get my head caught.
Oh my god.
Those hair snippers.
Should we talk about the man with hooks?
We have to talk about the man with hooks.
The MVP in the movie.
Man with hooks. Man with hooks. I think I see a man with hooks. Is that a sign?
Oh my god.
Do you guys see that?
He's right.
The phone. Shit.
Just some pervert in the elevator carrying a box of prosthetics.
But the best thing about the thing about the man with hooks and why we're saying man with hooks is the whole movie, they're like kind of trying to notice like signs, right? So they notice a sign of like pigeons or like a lake, and like, okay, that must mean that that's how we were gonna die. And so there's a scene where like this guy,
it's the guy with the hair who's doing all the drugs, and he like knocks something over in a closet and
he sees like shadows, and he's like, that's
man
the shadows
hooks?
Look like a man with hooks. Man with hooks! Man with hooks!
And then Clear Rivers is like, he's right.
He's right. And then they're like trying to call like, hey, a man with hooks, watch it. But they can't get the reception because they're in the elevator. Yeah. And meanwhile, there is a creepy guy holding a box of mannequin hooks.
Well, it's like...
No, I think
arms.
It's prosthetic limbs.
Yeah, like there's some hands, but there's also like a hook prosthetic. But before, it's again like red herring, the movie is like, we're like, okay, man with hooks, that sounds like a slasher guy, that sounds like someone who would kill. And he like, he leans next to the lady who they're trying to call and gives a big old sniff of her hair, but then the death is like her hair gets caught on a hook and then tussling, and she gets her neck caught between the closing doors of the elevator, and then is ultimately decapitated when the elevator like keeps on moving.
Well, and the ironic thing is, maybe I'm remembering it wrong, the motorcycle guy notices that the creepy hook man is sniffing her hair, and
no,
he's like,
the black
hey,
guy.
Dude,
there's a motorcycle guy.
But
he is the motorcycle guy. Oh yeah,
you're mixing up the lottery player, which you haven't gotten to yet, with the motorcycle hair was driving a car. He was driving like a Thunderbird or something like that. But anyway, like the motorcycle guy leans over. He's like, "The fuck,
wait,
dude?
What the fuck's going on?"
Ironically, isn't, maybe I'm remembering it wrong, but isn't that what causes her hair to get caught in the hook by him pointing out, like, "Hey, this guy's being pervy."
Or
no,
she,
because
like,
she answered
down
the phone and she was on her knees, and then she gets up when she hears Amanda Hooks and she gets scared.
Right,
and then gets caught. She's like, "Ah!"
And then they're trying to, like, you know, I don't think, what happens? Like, because, oh, she tries to run off. The door opens and she runs off. Okay, right.
Yeah. And she gets, her head pops clean off.
It could happen to anyone.
But yeah, Man with Hooks.
What is there? He's an MVP. I think.
It's funny because when
he comes in the store sometimes.
He's a regular. No, when the her head is caught in the elevator and it's the elevator's moving. The black guy in the elevator and the man with hooks are both like, oh my god, oh shit! Like the man with hooks is also very scared of what's happening.
Oh yeah, that I like that he's like, oh no, I'm sorry.
Oh,
like he's
Jesus.
Like,
I
just
yeah,
he's
like,
smell
I can't
your hair.
I'm yeah. sorry, I'm just a regular pervert. I wasn't trying to kill you.
Yeah, I'm not a murderer.
This is basically like the Elseworlds version of that episode of Seinfeld when George feels that girl's material. which by the way, that happens outside an elevator in that scene.
It's always
this
an elevator.
This is the dark version of that moment.
What try to think of other deaths we got. So we got,
oh,
you know,
my favorite death, or it's not my favorite the death, but the sequence is my favorite, is the race car driver.
And oh, in his kitchen?
It's just so... Well, that's the most Looney Tunes.
He's like juggling. He's like... Burr.
Well, it also feels like this is the most... Like you mentioned, Jackie, that this movie doesn't seem... It seems like the deaths are random. But this is the one that feels the most like, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
Let's kill him.
Every single bit. Like he goes... He sets up the spaghetti's going to be on the outside.
Wait. So, Mike, let's set the scene of his douchebaggery first.
He just won the lottery.
What just happened to him?
Well,
he's gone.
He just won the lottery the day before this crazy traffic accident. And so he's coming back to his apartment. He has a brand new Mac. He's got other
iMac, baby.
He's got a fancy new watch. And he's listening to his voicemails, and it's all these women being like, hey, I heard about your thing. Like, call me. I heard that you have, it's not even $1 million. How much did he win? And it was like $250,000.
It's like, hey, I heard that you just bought a new iMac.
I heard that you
call
have
me.
An iMac. It's Stacy. Give me a call. And it's like, he's listening to his voicemails. He's heating up some food.
He goes to his stove or his oven, yeah, stove, and he has a disgusting plate of spaghetti in a pan.
Place is disgusting.
He tosses the spaghetti out onto the street outside, and while there's still some spaghetti left in the pan, just haphazardly squirting oil all over.
Oh yeah, turning
onto the
up
gas stove.
He's turning up the gas on the stove. He throws some old Chinese food into a convection oven.
He does the classic thing of picks up the Chinese food out of the fridge, smells it. It's kind of bad, but he's whatever.
Hey, whatever. And there's a magnet that fell from. For the fridge, so that's sparking in
puts that into a toaster oven, and he sticks his hand down his garbage.
Well,
because
he drops his brand new, what was it, a ring that he bought, and he's like, obviously I gotta stick my whole arm in the garbage disposal.
You have my favorite, maybe my favorite moment of the movie, where his hand is stuck in the garbage disposal, his toaster oven is sparking because he has a magnet in there and about to blow, and then he has this grease
oil,
fire that starts to
there's a grease fire, he's
and
trying
to We should point out during this whole sequence, he is shirtless.
Oh, yeah. He got home, took off his shirt, and said, time to fucking cook at the stove, first of all.
With oil, too.
With oil. Yeah, this is the one death where you're like, yeah, dude, you're fucking, of course you're going to die, you dumb shit.
It's so good because you know he's going to die, and you're like, how is he going to die? How is this going to work?
How does it work?
He's able to finally take his hand out of the garbage disposal, but by this time, the fire is really raging.
Also, all the windows slam shut in his apartment.
He tries to get out of the window. Yeah, get out of the apartment, but the windows slam shut and lock somehow. So he breaks the window open and he jumps through, and then his apartment explodes.
But he's on the fire escape. You think okay, he's gonna get through it. He finally falls down close enough to the ground where he's okay. And then what does he slip on? But
he
that
slips
old
on
spaghetti.
His spaghetti. It sets it. This is the Hitchcock moment.
And then he falls.
Undone by my own spaghetti litter.
I'm hoisted by my own spaghetti. And then when he falls down on the ground, and the ladder from the fire escape surges down oh, but it doesn't hurt him. But then it goes through his eyeball.
Well, what's so funny is because as he's trying to exit his exploding apartment, he's on the fire escape and it won't go down all the way. So he's like,
bouncing.
Yeah, so he basically loosens it up, and that's what. And again, this was another moment where I think all of us were like, "Shit!" The thing like impales him in the head.
Oh yeah, goes right through the skull.
Well, doesn't it go through his eyeballs? Yeah. Like, don't you see his body later, and he's got these two huge holes where his eyes used to be?
Well, it's just one, but yeah, that's why. Like those moments where I like that one because it's more goofy. But like in the ones that where all these things happen and like this one, it's clear like there's some spirit or supernatural force, like the magnet just randomly falls
off. Yeah.
The windows shutting, like those are like, it feel like it's a ghost story at that point. Yeah. But then I like it comes, that one comes around for me because the ladder falling seems realistic.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, so
we also should point out, and this gets into another bit we haven't really gotten into yet. If we want to reference the first movie yet even more, but this movie does have some funny lines, and I think one of them being from this douche guy where he keeps saying like, "Oh man, I'm the luckiest guy on the planet," you know?
Oh, yeah. I just won $250,000.
I'm so lucky, man. So lucky.
I have an iMac.
As fun as this movie is, I think it is lacking in the funny lines department compared to the first one. Because the first one, we have to mention this, because who knows when we'll do a Final Destination 1 episode proper.
This is
basically
it.
What this episode is.
This is what this
but,
is.
But there is a line in the first movie, and it comes from the bully character. And Nick, you're smiling. Why don't you tell us what this line was?
Well, they survived, right? And there's a bully and then Sawa guy. And, you know, they're always beefing, right? And then the bully's like, "I don't owe you anything.
I control my life, not you.
Carter.
I'm never going to die.
I'm never going to die. I'm out of here."
The way he says it is so funny.
Yes.
And it's just a weird thing to say because, I mean, clearly, even if you had that mentality, like,
bro,
you will
that's
die
not true.
Sometime.
I'm never going to die.
Dave and I were cracking.
No, dude. Science is reversing aging. I'm never going to age either.
I'm never going to die.
I will cheat.
I mean, that's, hey, if we're talking about a weird realism of like, that is a teenager. I'm going to live forever.
My dad told me I had my whole life ahead of me. I'm never going to die.
Yeah, we missing any. There's the barbed wire.
Not to derail, but I would say some quality dialogue from this movie. I'm just looking at a great page right now, but the talk between Kimberly, the main girl, and Rory, who's the drug doing, hair having guy, and he's like, "Hey, if I die, would you throw away my drugs and my paraphernalia
and my porn.
My porno?" And he says porno specifically. It's just so funny.
What does he say? He says anything that will make my mom feel bad.
Anything
that will
break my mom's heart.
Yeah, break
please.
My mom's heart.
Well, and again,
Kimberly's just that, like, okay.
Why would they be like, "Well, Mrs. Drug kid,
he had a lot of porno.
She'd go looking for it. She'd see it when she's cleaning out his apartment.
She'd go clean out his home, and she'd be like, "There's so much porno here."
This kind of gets into a little bit like we were discussing, like, how old are some of these people? Like, how old is he supposed to be? The druggy guy.
15.
Mid 20s.
40.
He's driving to high school.
Yeah, somewhere between 15 and 45.
Yeah. There's a couple characters in this who are, you know, clearly adults, but for the ambiguous ones, it's very ambiguous.
Yeah.
Well, this movie, I think one of the things about this movie actually that's most memorable to me is the final scene. So this kid who got saved at the car crash scene or whatever. Mm. They're at their house, I guess, because
a weird thing. Yeah, they were just like invited them for a barbecue.
Yeah, they're all together having dinner after they think death is gone, and this kid, he's barbecuing, and he goes back to the barbecue, and then, you know, the barbecue just explodes. But what's so funny, like, this is when, like, it, to me, it becomes like camp. The arm of the kid falls in the kid's mom's plate. And she's like,
and it looks very like barbecued arm.
They got a real good. The only thing
The only thing this scene is missing is the.
Yes. Tony Todd.
Tony Todd could come out like in the little circle, and be like, "That's all, folks."
Yeah. You need it, like, the crypt keeper or something.
No,
someone cackling after that.
It's just like the whole way this scene, this last moment is framed is comedic because they're like, wait a minute, you saved who? What happens? And I love it because it doesn't cut to a close up of the kid. It cuts to them looking, and it's this far away shot where you see him off in the distance. He looks like a dummy almost, and it just blows off.
It's pretty funny.
In the center of the shot.
The tone of this too reminds me of Creepshow. Like this could be like an episode of that.
Yeah, that final scene is so memorable to me because it's almost like the franchise takes on another level of identity. It feels like this one was some of the deaths were funny, but like this one just goes like it more Looney Tunes even than before, and it's just we know what we're doing.
It's like Wile E. Coyote type shit.
It just occurred to me, too. I mean, more so than Looney Tunes, this movie goes full on like Itchy and Scratchy.
That's
where
good.
You're just like Scratchy gets his man with hooks gets his tail caught in the elevator.
Seriously, the level of like eventually, like if they get to Final Destination 10, it's literally going to be like someone standing underneath the Empire State Building and it starts to crack, and suddenly like the needle part on the top of the building like stabs someone in the eye,
and then they scream and their eyes pop out of their head and their tongue rolls out 40 feet.
I feel like that's an Armageddon or something.
It's more specific, like Itchy and Scratchy, where it doesn't crush them, it just stabs them in the eye.
Yeah.
It makes a whistle sound all the way
down. No, it's going to be like the moon, like crashes into something.
Or like someone somehow gets sucked out of a spaceship and like the rings of Saturn are like spinning like a buzzsaw and it cuts them out.
Love it.
That'll be Final Destination 11.
Yeah. I mean, they're supposed to be working on another one, and the thing is like if you look at like the how much these movies made, like they always were profitable, like did well.
Sure, yeah.
The most profitable one was the 3D one that came out in 2009, and then this was actually the least lowest grossing movie.
That's so funny
because
it's
that's
the best
ironic
one.
Because it's the one that set everything in motion for the tone. I think it's kind of the one that most people remember.
The only other like thing I know of a Final Destination is, and maybe this is just like, I don't know how I know this. It might just be like I saw a scene on cable or something, but there isn't one of the deaths. Someone's in like a tanning bed that gets like turned on really hot.
I think that's part three.
Three, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like something that would happen.
Well, I was saying when we were watching this, like all those, like I after that coroner scene, is that how you say it? Coroner?
Yeah.
The death.
The name is pronounced Ali Cornerer, Ryan.
Yeah. Like when they after that, I was like, I think this is cut for TV. I've never seen this scene before, and I'm like, I feel like this doesn't exist. Like this movie's kind of
like the haunted house bit when they go and meet him.
Like you can take that, out of there, and it doesn't matter. And I think like. And I was thinking, like, because I've only probably watched these on TV, and it's always like, or a couple. I've seen a couple in
the
theaters.
The film you are watching has been edited for content and time.
Well, specifically that scene, which I did have to avert my eyes when the coroner is explaining shit, and then he has like his pliers with the nipple ring.
God, that was I didn't like that. That was like Saw.
I don't want to like. But I can
but
see
he was
how
dead.
Yeah, why are you doing this?
That doesn't matter.
But it's
he's frozen. You're not gonna
that would make sense as something that they're like, we're just gonna snip this scene. That's a little too gross for
just
the rating.
The pacing of that, and also like I think it's basically like every commercial break you get one of these crazy, you know, scenes, you know, and then it's like okay, commercial right after this person dies, and it's like perfect for TV.
Yeah,
in a weird way. Something I wanted to bring up too. I was looking through, you know, the Chattopedia that the score for this was Shirley Walker, who we've she was the score on the Batman animated series.
Wow! And then she's also Mask one of Phantasm.
She's also one of the first, solo credited female composers in Hollywood, basically. And then she worked on Escape from L.A., you know, with Carpenter, True Lies,
True Lies. Wow.
What else did she do? And this is an important one. She didn't do the second one, but she did Ghoulies 1.
What?
Damn, Shirley Walker's That's why all Ghoulies over 1 was place. Better.
Guys, I think I realize Death's plan for this film festival. All these movies are tied together.
The Shirley Walker Film Festival.
I love that. Like the idea of like Shirley Walker is like, I'm not gonna do Ghoulies 2.
No, you guys are sorry.
That's a hard pass. I'm sorry.
Well, she cheated Death when she said no.
That's exactly.
It would have been the death of her career.
She is dead, by the way, by now. But she is dead, but by now.
Well, she could only cheat it for so long.
Yeah.
Oh,
did a brick fall on her head?
Sorry,
did a brick fall on her head?
Oh yeah, that's another thing about this movie is that they kind of just give the main character from the previous movie a throwaway death. He's like, yeah, he died by a falling brick. And so,
it's like. It's wild because like when you look at the trivia initially, I think they said he was originally supposed to die by like a flesh eating virus, which is like, what the hell?
That seems a little less cinematic, honestly.
They could have done like a cinematic sequence of his bloodstream and like this one cell goes stray.
Yeah, he had a slow death from an autoimmune disease.
His body starts to fail him. Not to keep bringing up quotes, but I am reminded again, just top tier screenwriting. There's the scene where they're at it's Clear Rivers and the main girl and their cop friend, and they're at like a gas station, and then that group of punks and skate rats are smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
So Clear like shoves one of them. She's like, "What the fuck are you thinking?" And this kid says,
"I'm thinking sucking my junk, biatch."
Those kids.
Which we did laugh out loud.
Wearing like the No Fear shirt.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Wait, what is one of them wearing like a Limp Bizkit
shirt
or something?
Yeah, that's what Limp I was just thinking of.
Suck my junk, biatch.
Well, that was the kid that got barbecued.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
At the Limp Bizkit.
You're right.
That was like, I feel like the word biatch would be, like the word biatch is written down on a piece of paper.
They had
in
write
a time
it out.
Capsule.
Yeah,
it's
gone.
In a time capsule.
What happened
that
to that?
Someone erected
I know,
in
no
2003.
One, no one calls anyone a biatch anymore.
Yeah, that
Why
is.
Why did that one fall out?
That one, that,
it's
that
so
one, yeah,
funny out the delivery that, like, it just doesn't, like, what are you looking, what are you thinking?
What the fuck are you thinking?
Because he's like smoking, he's smoking a cigarette next to like the gasoline
at a
or
gas
whatever.
Station.
Like, what are you thinking? I'm thinking, suck my junk.
Yeah.
It's good.
Oh,
it's really good.
Man.
Great, but, great writing, top to bottom, perfect film.
Yeah, I think it's a good ass time, and even they're all. I think that they're wise in that third one. It sucks that it sounds like those last two they go back to this, but I don't remember the third one being connected at all to anything. It's just new characters, new disaster, and also people are scared of amusement park rides all the time, roller coasters. It's like a it was a great movie. I remember, and also it's Mary Elizabeth Winstead. So
I've heard that when they make the Mortal Kombat video games, a big part of it is they just get everyone in like a room, like everyone who's like working on the game, and they try to brainstorm fatalities, like gruesome deaths. And I like to imagine this is made; these movies are made in a similar way, where they just get everyone in a room, like, okay, so who's got death ideas?
That would be a cool way. Oh yeah,
this
crush
is a real.
Glass.
This is a real working backwards type of writing process, I'm sure.
Yeah, totally, and it's fun, and I think it's especially at the time that you were like a kid watching these, it was they're a good ass time, and things stick with you. Some of those images for sure.
Well,
just people's heads exploding.
One thing I was thinking of, and I'm sure this will give Ryan another further appreciation for Final Destination franchise, is that Ryan, you said that the highest grossing one was the fourth one, right? The Final Destination. It was 3D.
Yeah.
Well, I was looking at the timeline of events from way back when, and The Final Destination came out August 28th, 2009, and it was 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it really led the way for a beloved film that you have, which came out on December 18th, 2009.
Yeah, just a few
yeah,
years,
I think
just a few months later.
I think James Cameron, I think it's pretty well known, it was a scramble to make Avatar 3D in the days ensuing
because
the release.
Because Cameron saw that,
okay, but
and
also,
he was like,
I,
we gotta...
counterpoint to like it being the most successful. Was it, or was it just that 3D ticket sales are more expensive than regular ticket sales?
So that's the thing I brought up with Cody one day. I'm like, yeah, Cameron was just a sneaky businessman who just inflated his
ticket prices.
Yeah, you're going to be the best, highest grossing movie if your tickets cost like $25 per.
It's such a smart business move.
He's right, you know, but also people kept going.
aliens with a dollar sign. So
yeah, aliens.
To further talk about a movie that's not Final Destination 2, the Final Destination, aka Final Destination 4. Like, and to have a side note for 3D movies, like. I liked Avatar. It was a fun movie. It was visually impressive for its time. I haven't watched it in a while. But I will say, regarding specifically the 3D, when I watched that the first time, I honestly forgot I was watching a 3D movie 20 minutes in. Because nothing in Avatar is like, in your face! Yeah. You know what I mean? The Final Destination, movies like The Final Destination and My Bloody Valentine and Friday the 13th Part 3, it's all about the gimmick. They understand that 3D is a gimmick, and it's all about throwing shit at your face in the most obnoxious way possible, reminding you that you're watching a 3D movie. Whereas a movie like Avatar, I'm on my soapbox now, please be careful because it's starting to creak. So if it starts to creak, get me off of here. I don't want that to kill me.
I mean, but I'm about to push you off.
You're about to just push me off.
Man with box?
But like, I
man
feel
man
like,
with box.
Yes, 3D in Avatar is good, but like, I forget that it's 3D.
Yeah, because you get so immersed, David. You get so immersed into the world that you forget. You forget that you're in on Earth and you're in Pandora.
You forget you're on
and you
Earth
just,
watching
yeah,
the film.
You just, you,
and your
you just
skin turns blue and you become one with the Na'vi.
Yeah, you are now an an Avatar driver.
No, it's not that. Like, honestly, like it's more like I take the glasses off. I'm like, what's the difference?
You know bullshit. What I mean? I just watched it. Bullshit.
No, I mean,
it looks crazy. You forgot. You should have went to the re-release because it looks crazy.
I'm gonna say for 3D2 that
Avatar is overrated.
Oh, well, hot take over
I
there.
I mean, I don't think it's
hot take over
I don't think it's like rated.
I'm more Earth thinks that.
I was going to say about 3D real quick that at that time in 2009, the technology for the viewer for 3D, if you were a glasses wearer, it was very annoying to put those stupid 3D glasses over your regular glasses.
Yeah, what the hell,
glasses.
James?
Yeah, I
thought Avatar 2 was supposed to be glasses free.
I personally never was a fan of that.
Oh, yeah, Avatar 2 was supposed to be glasses free, huh?
He's trying.
You know, it's funny to point out while I'm on this Avatar rant, like...
In the Final Destination 2 episode.
Is it just... Yeah, exactly. Is it just me, or has there not really been much talk about 3D with Avatar 2? Like, Cameron hasn't been pushing it.
Well,
I mean,
it's
going to be in 3D, but...
Is it? Is it for sure going to be in 3D? I didn't even know.
So.
100%. I just watched a 3D clip. There's a clip of the movie.
But they're not hyping it like they did the first movie.
Because
it's not 2009.
Like, yeah, that was kind of a... I mean, I think people expect it. And I think with how well the re-release did, I think people are going to eat...
Also, at this point in time, we're on to 4D. Or what was it? 4DX. Oh, yeah. Like, if we're not going into a movie theater and the seat's not punching the shit out of you.
This is all assuming Avatar 2 is a real movie, which is a big assumption, I think.
It's true. Cody's still looking for it out there.
Out there in the waste.
I'm looking at 2009 3D movies because there were so many.
It was a moment.
Like there was Coraline My Bloody Valentine the year before which set it all off was the Journey to the Center of the Earth with Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, in 2008.
I mean, wasn't the 3D really just? I was joking about the ticket sales, but wasn't that it? Like, wasn't it just like, hey, maybe we can get more money from ticket sales if we just make 3D?
Well, I mean, I'm sure that's probably part of it, but I think people were using, like, Coraline uses 3D to a great tool. And then I think, like, James has been working on this for years at the time, and people were like, I guess he's on to something with 3D. Yeah, the old Jim. He's on to something. We better start putting Sam Worthington in things and making everything 3D because he's going to do it, you know? And so I think that was the case. And then it kind of fell off because... Everyone learned the wrong lessons and we're doing conversions instead of filming it in 3D. And
Yeah, after that, it was all like fucking Hobbit movies. Like, ooh, what about frame rate? We could do this. Oh, it's ugly as balls.
And Peter Jackson's in movie jail for that now. So
yeah.
Oh, well, no, he's. I think they let him out for that Beatles documentary.
Yeah, Let It Be was his
they released
bail.
Him.
Yeah, he's maybe coming back. Yeah,
he said, don't worry, I'll do a normal frame rate.
He had a get out of jail Beatles card.
Yeah, he couldn't change that old 16 mil footage.
Well, I think if we're talking about Let It Be, the Peter Jackson movie.
It's good. I mean, I guess, would you guys recommend Final Destination 2?
Or the
series, I guess, as a whole?
Absolutely.
I don't need to see another Final Destination movie ever again, but I would watch 2 again.
Yeah, this is a fun series. This is, honestly, I think this is kind of a superior version of a Friday the 13th type movie, where it's like, it's a horror movie where it's all about the kills. You don't care about the characters. It's all about inventive kills. And this is even better, I think, if you're looking at that type of horror formula, because it's not just the kill that happens. It's the lead up to the kill. How are they going to die? You know, it's way more creative and fun than, and don't get me wrong, I love my beloved Friday the 13th series, but this is just way more tense. You know what I mean? Like in the first movie, it's just, or in the Friday the 13th movies, you're like, when's he going to sneak up and kill him? You know what I mean? That's like the tenseness, I suppose. Whereas with this one, it's like, there are literally 100 different things that could kill him right now. I have no idea which one it's going to be, and this is fun. I'm on the edge of my seat.
Well said. Yeah, I think I was surprised. I'm like rooting for it. I want to see the crazy stuff, but there was times where I was like leaning forward with like I can't believe it. Like, and this movie's, you know, 20 years old, and it was like awesome. I don't know. It's still fun, and it's stupid as hell, but a good ass time. So
I think, you know, as probably all of you guys know, that I have a low tolerance for like cinematic trash, but like this is, for some reason, like I'm pretty much all in on this kind of this. Well, the first two, at least. I haven't seen the other ones, but this is like, it's so fun. Like it's such a very fun time at the
movies.
It's
a ride.
Yeah, exactly. And I was surprised how much I like these.
I'm glad to hear that, because I think it's cinematic trash to the its greatest degree.
It's cinematic junk food. This is like a quarter.
Yeah,
this
but
is a quarter
it's,
pound
but
of
it's
cheese.
Really, but it tastes. Yeah, it tastes good. Like
this is basically like, I feel like Final Destination 1 is like McDonald's, like a junk food, and then or fast food, and then Final Destination 2 is that same fast food, but you're squirting like a ton of sauce over it.
Or you got a McFlurry with it.
And
time.
Also, this time you're like a little
this is no. This is like the first one is just like a Big Mac, but the second one is like the gimmicky. Like this is like the Double Down or some weird insane fast food thing.
This one, this is like the PB&J burger.
Or should we say the McRib, maybe?
Oh, no, but the McRib tastes
the
terrible.
The McRib is just awful.
That's only gimmick.
Oh, hell no. Now I'm getting my soapbox.
We got to cut before things come to blows.
If any of the Final Destination
Death
movies are
the McRib is my avatar.
I will defend the McRib to my death.
And on that note,
well, I really wish you didn't say that. I feel like you've just set in motion
your ironic McRib
your
death.
Final destination, Nick.
If I die,
your ironic
eating,
death.
If I die eating a McRib, I'll be happy.
You're ready to go to heaven with the McRib.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to about do it for this installment of the Apocalypse Video Shocktober Spooktacular Part 2, where we reference Part 1 incessantly.
There's a whole convo on the whole series,
you
know?
Not the context. Yeah,
we, or the whole show. I mean, we don't have to watch any of these other ones. I don't really want to either, but I'm just saying.
I kind of do.
Yeah, you don't need to watch Avatar. It's fine.
Yeah.
And Avatar 2 doesn't exist, so.
Anyway, let's go all get a Big Mac McRib. Anyway, bye.
See you next time.
Bye.
And with hooks.
And with hooks.
And with hooks.
He's right.
Can we go get the guys? I'm getting horny.